Hey everybody, Mark here. Nicole has mentioned a few times on mic that I should do more shameless self-promotion of my band. So, shameless self-promotion it is.
Look into my eyes, do you know this dance? Do you know this dance? Do you know this dance? See behind the lies as you make your plans. Will you take a stance? Do you know this dance?
That's right, the Slackademics have a new album coming out soon and our first single just dropped. This song, This Dance, is actually a re-recording of a tune we had on our EP a couple years back. You can find it on all the streaming services, so give us a follow. We're going to release a new single every few weeks, and the album itself, Pass Fail, will be available for pre-order come January. Probably you should have been hearing this song under my voice during this promo, but then it would be weird because you'd be hearing my voice singing and my voice talking at the same time. So, how about the bridge? I think the song has a good bridge. We got some cool backing vocals, a cool bass line by Brian. Check it out.
Speak up, let your body talk. Move up to the front row. Gear up for the time of your life. As we define our own destiny.
Give us a follow and a bunch of listens on streaming. And now, ads! So it's like, did they try to do this? Probably not, but why is it actually completely work for every single section except for one that we'll get to?
You think about that too much, Mark. Did they try to do it that way?
I think that's right.
They just did it because it sounds good, man.
Famously, I'm always interrupting the podcast asking, did they do this on purpose, Mr. Poppany? Okay, so...
Why do I sound like a dope in your mind's eye?
I don't know.
Is that what I sound like?
I don't know. Hey, I'm Mark.
Hey, I'm Nicole.
And this is Never Mind the Music.
What are we going to talk about today, Mark?
So, despite being early high school really into hard rock, like I was into Alice in Chains and Soundgarden, a lot of grunge and post-grunge. This is even before punk and ska and all that stuff, right? I was really a rhythm guitarist.
Okay.
You know, when I say rhythm guitar, you know what that means, right?
I know what that means, yes.
Yeah. The people know. That's not the person playing the solos and the leads. That's the strummy person.
That's like the George Harrison.
George Harrison was the lead guitar player.
Okay, well, whatever. Edit it out.
So George Harrison would play leads because John Lennon was singing more. And that's a part of it, right? I liked to sing along, so I tended to do the strummy stuff while singing along to a song rather than learning solos and stuff.
I got it. I was also going to say, I think Dave Matthews plays the rhythm guitar, even though he sings.
He's the only guitar.
He's the only guitar.
And if you watch them, they do crazy. He's doing crazy stuff. Not all rhythm guitar is easy. I'll put it that way.
Right.
And incidentally, my high school ska band, who we have not heard on the pod, and I'm pretty happy
that
we won't.
Was it called the Dave Matthews Band?
That's right.
Imagine. Yeah. And then he
DMB.
Was like, I'm taking it.
I was the rhythm guitar player in that band. We had two guitars, not because the other guy was better at solos, but because I was better at the chink, 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 chink stuff, right? The rhythm is not always easy. Anyways. This eventually turned me into one of those like, oh, there's an acoustic guitar here. Let's all sing along kind of guys.
Oh,
right?
Yikes.
You don't act like you weren't a part of that scene sometimes.
I was a part of that scene many times.
I think I thought it would get me girls. And it did not.
Well,
it was
know.
Unsuccessful, I would say, in general. But before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to start with a tribute to the legacy of the 90s strummy acoustic guitar.
Okay.
So this tribute is the top five 90s jangly acoustic, mostly, guitar sing-along strumming patterns.
Okay, I'm in.
Not songs, strumming patterns named after songs.
Strumming patterns named after songs.
Right.
I'm here.
To be clear, we're not talking about power chord chugs.
Okay.
No chugga chugga. Sorry, Glycerine.
Right.
Sorry, Welcome to Paradise.
That's a good one.
Fun to play. Easier to play than a lot of this
for
stuff.
For sure.
But not what I'm talking about. Not finger picking. Sorry, December by Collective Soul.
Ugh.
Sorry, you don't like Collective
not into
Soul?
Collective Soul. They're really polarizing as a band.
Maybe we have to talk about that. Okay. No, You Were Meant for Me by Jewel, right? No finger picking. Nor Cool Riffs. No Unsung by Helmet.
Okay.
Remember that? Da 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 da. It's a great riff.
Not really.
No Jeremy.
Oh. He's so broken.
Pearl Jam. Jeremy, well, it doesn't end well in Jeremy.
It does not. Spoilers.
I was like, only very recently did I learn that Jeremy kills himself in the song.
It was
the video made me think he kills everybody else in the class, but no, he's a suicide, which makes a lot more sense in terms of the message of the song.
They actually made us watch that in like high school health class or something. Lord. As like a prevention.
Bully prevent? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Bold.
Okay.
I think I might have made that up, but it's still relevant.
That's crazy.
That maybe would be crazy, right? Memory. Now I'm thinking like as a teacher, like there's no way that
would be a problem, I would think. I mean, great song, great music video,
it's
Pearl
also
Jam.
Like the 90s, like parents didn't call as much.
No, they didn't. They didn't have phones back then.
They didn't
even
have a phone. They had to send a telegraph or whatever.
A telegram, right? You have to have a dude on a horse come up.
And like, yeah, dude, with like a colonial
outfit.
Also,
to be clear, we're not talking subspecies. So the lightning crashes is just a slow subgenre of number one I'm about to play.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
For the five top 90s jangly acoustic, mostly, guitar sing-along strumming patterns.
I'm so ready.
Okay. This one is the down, down, up, up, down, up. Also called the big me.
Yeah, they're all like, and I see what we're doing now, because I'm listening to that and I'm seeing you. I didn't know you then, but you in my mind's eye, surrounded by a horde of people. And you're like, I'm doing it. I'm leading the pack. So, I'm popular.
To be clear, by the way, that's Big Me by the Foo Fighters.
Sure.
I actually gave up trying to learn the guitar as an eighth grader when that song came out. I love this song. I failed to learn the guitar and only came back a year later.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, that's number one. Number two, the down, down, up, down, down, up, down, up, down, up, up, down, up.
Okay.
Which is called The Runaround. Oh, once upon a midnight, dear, you woke with something in my head. I couldn't escape the
memory of a phone call and of what you said. Like a game show. Blues Traveler. I actually saw them live last year. Last year.
Whoa.
I saw them live.
How are they?
Not great.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. I don't want to make any speculations, but I'm pretty sure they were on drugs. Because they kept leaving.
It's jam bands. Of course they were on drugs.
But like he kept leaving the stage and then coming back in and then like wailing on his harmonica.
Yeah.
And also the crowd was really, really weird. Because it was a bunch of people my age that like were seeing it kind of ironically and like, why not? It was a cheap ticket. But then there was another group of younger people that looked like they were like on tour with Blues Traveler. They had like signs and they knew every song and
they were Blues Travelers.
They were Blues Travelers and it was kind of blue. It was sad. Like you saw them and you're like, ooh, call your mom.
Yeah, they are immortalized as one of the top five. 90s jangly acoustic.
I enjoyed seeing them live, but it was weird, man. It was a scene.
Wow. Okay, number three, the down, 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 up, down, up.
Okay.
Also known as the Mr. Jones. That one notable because it gives you the emphasis on the and of four. Down, 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 up, down, up. Whatever. Anyways.
It's so notable.
Almost done.
Okay.
The down, down, up, down, down, up.
Okay.
Very simple. Emphasis on beats one, two, and four. The Runaway Train.
Oh. Call you up in the middle of the night. Like a firefly without. Yeah, I'm like transported to a very distinct time and place in my head of like singing that song around, like, you know.
So we've got the Big Me, the Runaround, the Mr. Jones, the Runaway Train. These are very dude forward, but you also have to remember the era.
Sure.
You have to remember the vehicle of these strummy patterns back in the era, which is me.
You mentioned Jewel. I mean, she's really the only one.
I mentioned Jewel by excluding her because of no finger picking.
No finger picking.
No finger picking. And so. Next, we get down, 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 up, down, up, down, 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 up.
Yeah.
Also known as the Wonderwall. Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you.
By now you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe
it really is so good. And like, a student came up to me a couple of years ago and they were like, "Professor, have you ever heard of a band called Oasis?" And I was like, I almost threw up. I was like, "Yeah, I just saw this documentary movie about this band called Oasis and I'm really interested." He's like, "I think I'm going to start a band like Oasis, an Oasis cover band." I was like, "All right.
Do it. Oasis tribute." Yeah. So to be clear, I never really learned to play the full song. I would play the song all the time in high school, but I always kind of faked the chorus. All the roads we have to walk. Mm-hmm. I just sort of never learned the chords. Every chord sounded good. So I just played them. But man, did I have this part down pat.
Today was
that transition between the third verse is so good. Dugga, dugga, dugga. I think this is one of the most iconic aspects of this song. But honestly, what I want to talk about with Wonderwall by Oasis, by the way, Wonderwall by Oasis from 1995. What album?
What's the story? Morning Glory.
What's the story? Morning Glory.
So
right?
Good.
What I want to talk about is melody. But first, Oasis. What's there to say? What's your history with them? Talk to me about Oasis.
I am a fan of Oasis. I loved this album when it came out. It was one of the first albums that I really got into. And I realized like, okay, this is like, F the Beatles, Oasis is better. I know now that that's not true, but I was like, this is the Beatles for our generation. Also not true, but that's how I felt in that moment. And then later on, I really got into like the quarreling brothers. I really like that family dynamic there. And just like following the ups and downs and the band, they seemed like real rock and roll to me. And the fact that they were like troubled.
Right.
And I just really liked that. But the song is great. I mean, there's so many great songs on this album specifically. It's really the only Oasis album I know,
so,
being honest.
You don't know anything from Definitely Maybe from 1994?
Oh, yeah, I guess I probably would.
Supersonic, Cigarettes and Alcohol. This is Live Forever, which is probably...
Oh, right.
I didn't have this record, but this is probably the one I heard the most.
Yeah. Like Coldplay a little bit. Do you think like Coldplay was influenced by Oasis?
I mean, I'm sure Coldplay was, but I mean, he sounds just like John Lennon there.
Right. It really leans into the word maybe a lot.
Maybe. Are you going to be the one that saves me?
Yeah,
oh, wait, wrong song. Oh, yeah. And the falsetto, the double track falsetto sounds so much like John Lennon.
Hmm.
And honestly, I think this is so I like all these songs. I never got into Oasis. Because I was really rebelling against that 60s resurgence kind of neo Beatlemania that happened in the 90s, where the anthology came out and everybody was talking about the Beatles and these guys sound just like the Beatles. And I sort of like liked the song, but hated the vibe that obviously, you know, the Beatles are one of my favorite artists of all time.
Is
I got
why?
Over that.
Because you were just like, they're trying to steal the Beatles' thunder and how
no,
dare
No, I did
they?
Not like the Beatles as a high schooler.
Oh.
I didn't know, or this would have been middle school, right? Late middle school.
Yeah.
I was like so over all the like mom and dad nostalgia, Elvis first, and then the Beatles. I'm like, oh God, right? Little did I mean, I never gave the music a chance until probably I was, you know, honestly college.
Like prepping for this podcast.
That's right. Yesterday, years old. But I think I liked Blur a little more too, if you were going to talk about the different Britpop groups, and other podcasters have done way better. Deep dives on Britpop.
Never
on
got into
Britpop.
Blur.
Blur has some really good, like, dancey stuff.
Hey, put a clip in. Put a clip in, Mark.
I'll put up, like, There's No Other Way or something like that.
I don't know.
It's so good.
There's no other way. There's no other way. All that you can do is watch them.
What are some other like Britpop-y of this time? Was there like a second coming of Britpop and Oasis and Blur?
That was a great song. Connection, Elastica.
Don't understand how hard is this thing, but somehow it finds
is made.
Oh, I have no idea. There's no... I
Blur.
Never...
Yeah, yeah. It's super British. Like, if you hear the accent in the 90s, it's probably Britpop.
And I kind of liked that. I was
and
like,
it's
oh,
anti-grunge,
like,
yeah, sort of, is like, what it is.
Something about the accent. I had these, like, romantic ideas of, like, backpacking around Europe, and I think that this tickled me in a way.
Sure. And, look, I think they were wearing the Beatles things on their sleeves. It was obvious. Like, I mean, the John Lennon glasses that right, Liam like Gallagher... This is...
Turtlenecks, I feel
that's
like.
That's right. Yeah, this is
blazers.
How... They had a very 70s John Lennon right. look. Not a Beatles era, but later than that. Mm. This tune, Roll With It, from this album, sounds so much like John Lennon. All Too Much, though, of course, is a George Harrison song. But here's When I Get Home, the Beatles. It sounds the same. The vocal style, at least.
And, like, they were...
Hard Day's Night, by
they
the way,
were, like,
64.
Advertised as the new Beatles.
Sure. Yeah, totally.
Like they
and
were
even,
marketed that
even
way.
Even when Noel is singing, so Liam, lead vocals, Noel writes all the songs and is the guitarist, mm-hmm. but sings sometimes, he doesn't sound like any of the Beatles, but yet the instruments, the vibe is still there.
Yeah, at first I was like, oh, I love this Beatles song, but then it's not.
Not the Beatles, but John Lennon, imagine,
yeah.
right? Obviously, right? So they're not trying to hide. And for some reason, that just like felt so lame to me, even though everybody loved it. And I loved all the songs too. It's weird,
yeah.
but I couldn't like adopt it. Anyways.
I get that.
Okay.
Huh.
So just context of this song, fourth single on What's the Story, Morning Glory.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
There was a lot. It was a great album.
First one, some might say. Second one, Roll With It, which we just heard.
Mm-hmm.
Then Morning Glory. Then this. And then Champagne Supernova,
yeah.
I think, would have been the next
yep.
one. So crazy. How high do you think this peaked? Considering how iconic this song is now,
oh,
30 years
I mean,
later.
You're setting me up. I would have said it was number one, but now the way you've set it up, you've primed me to say no. And I've known you. You're trying to trick me.
It's eight.
Eight?
So high, but not that high. But
for how many weeks? Like how many
no
weeks
idea.
Was it on the charts?
You're gonna have to do your own research, Nicole.
No thanks.
That I don't know. It was higher on other charts, you know, modern rock or whatever, but Billboard Hot 100.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast. Come, baby, come, baby, baby, come, come.
So, I don't know how deep we want to get into the feuding. Like, people can listen also to Rob Harvilla's podcast, 60 Songs That Explain the 90s, which is super awesome, by the way. Nice conversations about how much these brothers hate each other, but these brothers hate each other.
Yeah.
Before we talk about the song, do you want to say anything about that? Like, the dynamic of this band and the feuding,
yeah.
they're touring, like, now, and I think they still hate each other.
I
That's
think
wild.
That they do... still not like each other, but they still love each other. And I think that that's interesting about siblings, that you don't have to like each other, but you do always love each other. They're very close in age. They're only like, well, like maybe 5 years apart, 4 or 5 years apart.
Oh, that's not that close in age.
Well,
that's...
not that close, right? But they shared a room for their whole lives growing up. They were really like raised really close. There's actually a third brother.
Okay.
Did you know that? There's an older brother.
Jiminy Gallagher. No, what?
His name's Paul Gallagher.
Paul. He's older.
He's older. And then Noel's the middle child and Liam's the youngest child. So I'm planning in this podcast to talk about like birth order theory and how that is relevant to like their personalities and generally like the downfall of the band. We can make some speculation here.
Let me just say that has nothing to do with what I want to talk about. So let's just talk about it now.
Okay, cool.
Let's just talk about it now. And we're going to talk about Melody afterwards.
So you have an older brother or a younger brother?
Okay. Not 5 years, though. He's only about 2 years older than me.
What are some differences you notice in your personality versus your brother's personality?
I'm way like louder and sort of more intense. My brother's way more chill than I am.
Right. And if there's someone that like needs to make a decision about your parents or the family, does that usually fall on you or your brother?
I would be the one probably assigned the crazy decision.
It's so funny because for me, I'm the younger sister and I also would be the one assigned to make a decision. And that goes against like traditional birth order.
Yeah. So he's not old enough that it was like the Gallaghers had an older brother who was 5 years older. Mm-hmm. That's then you're having this situation where you've got a grown up and an adolescent in the house. My brother's close enough in age that like we were always developmentally similar, except for obviously there was a point at which he was an adult legally and I wasn't. But it's not like we had aside from when we were little kids, a difference in like capability that was so massive that our birth order dictated our personalities in the way that it can sometimes.
And a lot of times it comes out more if there's more than two or more than one or two kids in the family. So traditionally what we say that an older child is more responsible, is kind of like a deputized parent in some cases, that like if a parent isn't around, like the oldest child is going to take the lead in decision making.
Well, and if you've got five of them, you've got an adult or something, possibly, when you've got an eight-year-old.
And we also see in really large families, like that older child being deputized to be a parent is actually really maladaptive for that kid as they age up. To like give a kid the responsibilities of an adult like can be pretty problematic longitudinally for that kid as they age up. They have this level of responsibility that is inappropriate of a child, which is an interesting sidetrack to this. But Paul was the oldest. They say that older children experience more pressure to succeed or more have higher academic aptitude because they feel like they need to be constantly proving themselves. And then they second child comes along and kind of dethrones the oldest child. Mm. So here that would be Noel, like he is born and now he's the star, right? And kind of overshadows Paul, right? And middle child, but he's not, right?
He's not the lead vocalist.
No. And maybe that's what
but he adds, writes the song.
Yes. And maybe that's what kind of adds some tension. They say middle children are often really good negotiators and really eager to keep the peace. And I think in Oasis, I might be wrong, but I feel like Noel always seemed more like level-headed than Liam. And Liam kind of seemed like a firecracker. And Noel was just trying to like keep all the pieces of Oasis together. And Liam was the one that was like, F you.
I don't know.
Or was it maybe both of them?
I don't know. Everything I've heard is they're just like going at each other all the time. Like, but I don't know. Like I liked the songs, but never dove into anything like about the band because the vibe was off for me until I was an adult.
For sure. So middle children are really like often are very, very good at conflict resolution.
Interesting.
Because they're usually negotiating between an older sibling and a younger sibling and trying to find like middle ground. So that carries over to adulthood.
How many kids in your family?
There's me and my sister.
Yeah,
there's
and two. Same. Yeah, so neither of us have any experience except for being the
youngest.
Babies, so
and the babies get away with everything, according to this birth order theory. And that was true in my household.
Not in my household.
The rules were less for me. I didn't have as many restrictions and responsibilities as my older sister. And even now when I'm in like my family home, I revert back to being like a 10-year-old. Like I'm laying on the couch. I'm like rolling my eyes that my mom's asking me to do dishes, like, which is wild because I'm a grown woman. Right. But they say that the youngest are often perceived as more outgoing, more adventurous, more carefree than their siblings.
Okay. Yeah, that tracks.
And are also potentially really prone to being spoiled or self-centered. And I think that when we talk about Liam Gallagher, we can like make that connection too. It's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I think when we talk about that last piece, for example, spoiled, like, how much of this has to do with the dynamics between the parents, right? Mm-hmm. The dynamics between the parents and the kids, rather. So, like, I think, for example, my son didn't watch TV when he was 1.5 years old, right? We tried to keep the screens away. My daughter, who's younger, the screen was on because she has a brother who's 3 years right. older. And also, I'm just so tired to find, you guys, you can watch TV when you're 2 years old because I need to cook dinner, right?
And they do say that for younger siblings, like, media exposure does change their development because they're often exposed to older media.
Right.
Like,
they're watching violent movies 5 years too soon because they have an older
sibling.
You're
defaulting to your son's preference, right?
That's
or the
right.
older
yeah.
child's preference.
But so what I was going to even ask is, like, you can say that that has a lot to do with us and the way mm-hmm. we treat them because we're tired or whatever. But also, if you think about a traditional American dream, mm-hmm. is things get better financially,
yeah.
for example. That doesn't always happen, obviously, but older people often have more disposable income than younger
sure.
people. And so how much of it is the youngest of five kids is spoiled because now the family can afford a TV, whereas the family couldn't right. afford a TV when the oldest was a little kid. You know, we were living in a studio apartment in the city, and now we've got this big yard or whatever because we're a decade older at that. So it's so complicated. Like, how many of these things?
There's a
plus,
lot
of course,
variables.
Actual
yeah.
just nature, right?
Right?
The genetics of it all.
Right. And I think right. that, you know, we can talk about, you know, birth order theory, and it is, like, even just to say it, it's pretty outdated. Like, I know when we were prepping for another episode, we were talking about, like, cherry picking theories that we use, but developmental psych, it really is like a moving target because so much is changing. Like, when these theories were developed, there weren't a lot of blended families. Like, what happens if you're an only child and then at the age of 12, you get five brothers and sisters through a marriage?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
sure.
where do you land in birth order theory? Then, like, what happens when you start layering theories of parenting and theories about discipline and control over parenting on top of these theories? Like, where does that play in? Because if you're in a family of five people, if you have five kids in your family, for sure, it's a more authoritarian family, like a disciplinary based family system, than it is if you only have one kid.
Why for sure?
Just because there's more people to keep in line.
You mean you just have to have a little more structure, you're saying, to make things work?
I think.
I mean,
see,
presumably
that.
That's a version. I believe that if that did happen. You could also say, oh, it's chaos or whatever.
Well,
but
need rules and order. Like, I mean, I am in a triad family. It's my husband and my daughter and me and, like, our dog, but I love you, Rusty, but you don't count here. And a lot of, we have friends that are a family of six, and they're lining up. This is breakfast. If you don't want it, you don't eat. Like, breakfast is on the table at 8 o'clock. That's when you're eating this breakfast.
No picky eaters when you're the fourth
right.
of four
and
kids.
And, like, that's not how it is in my house. Like, it's different.
But there's even just, okay, I have two kids. They're 3 years apart. You could imagine, though, let's say you had a second kid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, birth order, oldest, youngest. Your daughter's already double-digit age.
Yeah.
So the difference between, she's like an auntie to your little kid
right.
more than she is a big sister in some ways, right? So birth order theory can only explain some things because there's just so many infinite variables. The
right.
the genetic kind of predisposition of someone's personality. Like, I think me being outgoing might have something to do with me being the youngest relative to my brother, but it has a lot to do. My brother's a scientist.
Yeah.
Like, there's something inherent to his mode of being as a human that probably was going to be there regardless of him being, oh, the serious older kid.
Yeah.
Like, I was a good student. I was just, my whole vibe was different, right?
Same. I mean, my sister's a chemist too. Like, I didn't realize we had that in common, but there is a lot. I always look at her and look at me and think, like, how did we, our parents, we're raised in the same house with the same parents, with the same media exposure, the same food, the same environmental influences, same parenting structures, and yet still, were so completely different. And then you look at, like, twin studies and triplets separated at birth and raised with different families, and they're still very different. I'll give a shout out to one of my favorite documentaries called Three Identical Strangers. Have you ever seen that?
No, but
I'm giving you.
Are they separated at birth or something like that?
Like,
or adopted by separate families?
They're adopted by different families, but they were placed in families strategically for research to research parenting styles and to research long-term outcomes.
Wow.
And then they found each other, like, in the wild. They, like, were walking down the street and, well, at a college campus, and someone was like, hey, I thought you, like, dropped out. And he's like, what are you talking about? This is my first day here. He's like, you have.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they found, the twins found each other, and then they, like, it was in the newspaper. And then a third one was like, I'm a triplet. Like, I'm a triplet with you. I was adopted by the same place. And there was quite a frenzy in the 1980s, like a big media tour. I don't know. Check it out.
Twin studies are like a treasure trove of scientific data, right? For like versus nurture. I feel like one day we're going to find an artist that happens to have a twin or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to deep dive on twins. It's got to. We got to, right?
Twins,
it's so cool.
Are so interesting, but it's ethically... We're swearing on season two. It's ethically kind of fucked up, right? To like, well, for sure, we can't really separate people at birth to study them, right? Like, we can't do that.
Well, not on purpose, right?
No, but they did in this twin study, this triplet study, multiple
studies. For the sake of the science?
For the sake of the science. And not just these triplets. There were like maybe 30 or 40 different sets.
Because they were being put up for adoption, and they made the decision, instead of finding one home that will take all three, we'll split them. Oh my gosh.
And they did that for multiple twin pairs, multiple twin sets. And then when the movie came out, people were like, oh, I was adopted by that same agency. Let me do the 23andMe and see if I have a genetic match. And they found each other. And the records of that study are sealed until like 2065 or something, because they need to wait for all the twin sets to die before they can release the findings. Isn't that fucked up?
Wow.
I'm giving you so many movies to watch, but Three Identical Strangers, it's wild. It's just wild.
All right, everybody, take a look. Wow, that's craziness.
And if you're in my general psychology class in the fall, don't watch it until we talk about it, because it's an assignment. So
you're going to watch it in class on a rainy day.
Yes.
When recess is canceled.
Yes.
Nicole's just going to
wheel in the TV.
Professor Vatcher is just going to wheel in the old CRT TV from the AV room.
Yeah. Borrow one of my students' Hulu login because I canceled it and just play the video.
We ready to talk about the music?
I guess. Yeah. All right. Save me all from right. myself.
This is interesting, though. I don't know if it's going to connect to the melody of
it's
all.
It's fascinating.
Oh, I'm talking about symmetry and reflections over axis.
Dude.
Axes.
That's it.
I wish they were twins. It would be so much better. The Gallaghers.
They're close, though.
5 years.
Well, not close in age.
It was a long labor.
Like, Five years. She did it.
So I want to talk about the melody. This song is simple. It's singable. The chord progression, the strummy pattern's awesome. But let's figure out why. Let's first just call out that this is mostly pentatonic. Do you remember what a pentatonic scale is?
It has five parts.
Five notes.
Yes.
We talked about this, and do you remember what episode?
The one where we talked about...
Miley Cyrus. Party in the USA. That's right. Take a listen. This is an A pentatonic scale, A major pentatonic scale.
Mm.
Compare that to an A major scale. Similar, but the pentatonic is... simpler, fewer notes. They've subtracted all the half steps.
I kind of feel like it's richer too.
Interesting. Well, I play that cluster of all the notes together at the end, and it's so pretty.
Yeah. Sounds like Hamilton.
Hamilton? Wow. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a song from Hamilton.
Which one?
One of the songs where the sisters, they're getting married, and then she like goes back and like talks about how she met him first.
Song?
The Rewind.
Oh, that song is so good. What is that song called?
Helpless.
Is Helpless like in the middle of that?
It like, yeah, like it goes back to the start. Like they get married and then like she rewinds it. Should we go see Hamilton? I think we should.
Let's track pentatonic scales in Hamilton. All right.
They're
so
probably everywhere.
The instruments, the guitars, and even some of the vocal melody is just full on major, but a lot of the vocal melody is pentatonic. It doesn't matter. It's just part of the characteristics of what makes this so singable.
Mm-hmm.
You remember from Miley, pentatonic scales are almost universal across cultures. They're just, you know, playground nursery rhymes are often pentatonic. There's mm-hmm. just something simple and easy and catchy about mm-hmm. them. But what I want to talk about is how the notes in the melody interact with each other and sort of grow over the course of the song. Let's start with the chorus of the song.
Because maybe
kind of whiny, huh?
To be clear, I really like this song.
I like this song a
lot. I even really liked it back then. I just didn't like the vibe.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, he has that nasal John Lennon song, sound that's so cool.
That's cool.
This song, though, not very Lennon, right? The strumming pattern, not very Beatles. Okay, can I just tell you where we're going here?
Yes.
This whole melody is set up as notes orbiting an axis, notes reflected around an axis. So for example, if we have an A, there'll be a note three notes up and then a note three notes down. Let's say we have a B, there would be a note one note up and a note one note down. It's constantly shifting around, showing us two reflections. We could almost, using a term from other podcasts that we've done, we could almost say they are inversions, that we're getting melodic inversions. The melodies are two parts that are upside down. We call that inverted.
It's like they're rooted to one stable force, like one wonderwall.
Sometimes, whatever wonderwall means, sometimes it is on an unstable note. Sometimes it is a stable
note.
Come on, man. So basically think a mirror that notes are being reflected over.
Got it.
Each section is that in this song. Almost every single one. There's only one exception. All right. So let's just focus on the first part of the chorus. So 'cause maybe is just two notes, C sharp and A. How many letter names are A and C from each other?
Two. There's three. A, B, C. So
we say three, right? Okay. And then this is where we go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and go back to A, right?
Like the alphabet.
What about F and A?
F, G, A. Unless you're in London, then you have an H.
No, that's in Berlin, in Germany, right? London, it's just English, right? It's just English. Yeah, Germany has H, right? In London, it would be H, right?
Yeah, that's
so F to A is also a third. So A up three notes is C, or in this case, C sharp. A down three notes is F, in this case, F sharp. So 'cause maybe you're going to be the one that saves me gives us two reflections above the stable A. Take a listen.
Because maybe
we keep coming back to the A, popping up a three and down a three.
Do you think that they like, I always ask you this and you never know the answer, but do you think that they do that on purpose?
No,
they were like, this sounds good.
No, I think it's a pentatonic melody that orbits certain notes. It hits certain notes with a lot of emphasis. I don't know though. Every single section except for literally one line conforms to what I'm about to tell you. So maybe it's kind of on purpose. But they're not thinking of it as a reflection of an inversion. No, it's but it's happening.
Dude, just like, even though you're the youngest and we know that younger siblings are more generally more outgoing, it's not a causal correlation. It just is. That's just like the way it is.
The fact that I'm youngest is not what caused me, probably, but I sure as heck don't disprove the theory.
Yeah.
Right?
So they may not be doing this on purpose. It's just kind of naturally happening because they exist in a world that pentatonic scales are out there and they were influenced by it without them knowing their influence.
And there's like some element of what I'm doing what I'm talking about that Noel was trying to do. He just probably wasn't reflecting a melody over the
absurd. Didn't say, you know what we should do here is like a pentatonic inversion, which is term I just made
that
up.
That would be dumb, right?
Right.
And nobody really does that. Nobody
That's disappointing
goes,
to me.
Nobody goes
I want
out of the
someone
way.
To.
I mean, sometimes I'm like, hey, what would it be like if I wrote a song that did this? But people aren't time to do a motivic transformation. I'm going to transpose up. It takes like avant-garde kind of puzzle-y kind of music to really want to do that. Most of the time people are writing songs
based on intuition.
Cool. But even if you know what you're doing it, you're not like, that's not the end in and of itself.
Right.
Oh, a reflection would be. Now you could say, we talked about word painting. Where the high Mariah Carey note, you know, was on a word that would fit that, or like deeper than the whatever was a low note. You could do this trying to be cute, like the word mirror, I'm going to do a reflection, but they're probably just intuitively writing it. That doesn't mean it's not there for us to observe, though.
It's kind of like free will versus determinism.
Let's put a pin on that conversation. That's wild. Okay. Okay. All right. The second half of the chorus. And after all, you're my wonderwall, right? Whatever that means. This time, the axis we have now is C sharp. We go up C, D, E. And then we get CBA going down. So they do the same thing. They step this time. They don't jump. They step up to the third, mm-hmm. and then they step down. And you're going to hear it reflected again, just over the C sharp instead of over the A. And after all, you're my wonderwall. That, of course, uses the major scale. That part's not pentatonic. What do you think? You buying what I'm selling?
I get it.
Simple, right?
Yeah.
Nothing too special. This happens throughout the song, except for one moment. Before we do that, two examples.
Okay.
One more artsy-fartsy than the other. Soundgarden, which you know I love. I've mentioned them mm-hmm. before. They actually have a lot of kind of prog rock, yeah, progressive metal.
I just heard Black Hole Song on my way here today on the radio.
Great song. Doesn't do what we're talking about.
That's
but
a shame.
Their next album, Down on the Upside, 1996, this song, Switch, opens. If we think of the axis as being A, it's going to fall down a third and then climb up a third just in the same way. And a minor third down and a minor third up. That means it's exactly the same distance. Mm. And because it's Soundgarden, also it's going to change from 5/8 to 4/4, etc.
I love that.
The song's called Switch Opens, if I didn't already say that. I don't know if you could hear it. It's da da mm-hmm. da, and then da da da. Just yeah. a reflection of the same thing.
I love a compound meter too.
No compound meter.
Oh well, whatever, dude. I'm trying my best.
Compound meter. Give me an example of compound meter.
Like a 6/8. Didn't
That's
you
right.
say 6/8? 5/8. Oh, I misheard
4/4,
you. 4/4
changing to 5/8. So a complex meter.
Okay.
Well, a little spicier.
Pretty close though. Like that's something.
There's three different types of meter.
Okay.
This is one of the other types.
Okay. Not we haven't combat. Even talked about it.
We haven't even talked about it. Okay, this is Rosanna, 1982, Toto. This time our axis is B. We go G, A, B, and then D, C, B. So we go from a third, it's often a third because it's singable, climbing up to our axis, and then a third above, falling down.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
It's a good one.
That one might come up because it also has gnarly key changes. Might mm-hmm. bring that song back another time. Notoriously hard drum part.
Because it like is hiccupy.
A little hiccupy.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a technical term?
Also technically compound meter.
You set me up for that and I still
it's a 12/8. The Rosanna groove
12/8,
is 12/8
huh?
groove. Wow. Yeah. All right. So what about...
Can't you simplify it though? Can't you simplify that fraction?
Into...
So 12/8 would be like 4th. No. I need to write it down. 12/8. This is good podcasting, right? So if we simplify it, it'd be
divide
two,
by 4.
It'd be 3 over 2.
3/2. Yeah, but 3/2 means 3 half notes per bar. 12/8 has
three
half notes per bar, but the time signature tells you which things are the beat. So if you just randomly yes. simplify the numbers, you're giving yourself 4/4.
You're just adding more measures.
4/4 simplifies to be what?
1/1. So
1/1, which is useless
yeah.
music. Like,
it's, yeah, I guess.
It's technically correct. It does one whole note, but it doesn't tell us anything about the meter. You're not trying to write the simplest fraction. You're trying to tell people about the meter.
You're not trying to write the simplest
That's
fraction.
That's right. Okay. Everybody, all pop songs are in 1/1 now.
Imagine.
Okay. What about the rest of the song? Wonderwall. Yeah. What about the rest of the
what
song?
What about it?
Let's listen back to the beginning. This is verse 1.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now, you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe...
What do you think? Da-da, da-da.
It is what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah, so today, he's a little flat there yeah. on purpose. I think it's a C natural instead of a C sharp.
That's why I was having a hard time tracking, because
the axis this
flat.
Time is dissonant, though. It's B, it's mm-hmm. not the A. Day today is gonna be, so it's a step mm. above and a step below, yeah. reflecting over the B, but the B is not stable, right? So if we just simplify that, put it just on the piano, There's two versions of the C, right?
But
da-da-da-da, it's all orbiting our B this time.
It's
right?
So wild because usually when you play it on the piano, I can still like map it back to the original song. That sounds nothing like
Wonderwall.
That's
because I rusted.
Oh.
Two Day was gone. Right. I didn't. That's not how it goes. When we did all the I Will Survive things, you know, I was speeding up the bass line so we don't have to sit for 10 seconds. All right.
Who has 10 seconds?
That's right. What about the next section? Dude, oh my God. One of my friends listens to this podcast.
Okay.
Awesome. Josh, thank you.
Thanks, Josh.
On 1.9 speed.
You were telling us before.
I don't know that I put that on mic.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God.
Imagine. 1.9.
I talk fast, everybody. Can you imagine if I'm talking twice?
I talk so fast.
Okay. Josh, if you're listening, you just heard your name. Slow down and appreciate the name. Listen to your name at half speed. Josh.
Josh.
Okay, you can go back to 1.9 now.
Cool.
All right. So,
it would have made sense for him when you played on the piano.
If he slowed it down, it would make less speed.
Let's just make a podcast just for Josh.
Just saying everything slowly so it sounds great.
Super slow.
Okay, so here's the second half of the verse.
All right.
I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
So this one's a little juicier, a little spicier. We got more stuff going on. Pentatonic scale here.
Sure.
But it's still, if the axis is the B, it's still just an exact reflection going up the pentatonic scale. So B, C sharp, E, F. You reflect that over B, you get B, A, F sharp, E. So it's like, did they try to do this? Probably not, but why does it actually completely work for every single section except for one that we'll get to?
You think about that too much, Mark. Did they try to do it that way?
I think that's right.
They just did it because it sounds good, man.
Famously, I'm always interrupting the podcast asking, did they do this on purpose, Mr. Poppany? Okay, so...
Why do I sound like a dope in your mind's eye?
I don't know.
Is that what I sound like?
I don't know. I'll just auto-tune it. It'll sound cool. All right, so... The weird part about these sections is that the axis point in the chorus is A, which is the tonic home. The verses, it's always B.
You just had such a Boston accent when you said that.
Ooh, which word?
The weird part.
The weird part. Weird part.
Yeah.
Your mother's here.
Mac.
Well, yeah, Mac. Mac's easy enough.
Your mom's here.
Okay, so the only section that doesn't fit this axis theme is the pre-chorus, which is this bit.
And all the roads we have to walk are winding, and all the lights that lead us there are blinding.
And in typical pre-chorus fashion, it's kind of teasing it.
Yes, it doesn't feel finished. And the reason it doesn't work is because it's only four notes. Mm-hmm. F-sharp, G-sharp, A, B, and you can't really have an axis. But if I'm... Like when we did the Nirvana episode and I was really forcing it, trying to make the point on my paper... Shortly, we get more sets of notes that finish the axis. We get an odd number eventually.
Mm-hmm. There are many things that I would like to say to you, but I don't know how.
So, without getting into too much, we have the lower tetrachord.
Okay.
Four note group.
Love that.
F sharp, G sharp, A, B. And then we have A, B, C sharp, which is added later. So technically, they're still all revolving around
a tetrachord. Okay.
A lower four notes and then an upper four notes that link up on the A. So it still has seven total notes, but it's just they're using the major scale. So I'm really just forcing it to go for the pre-chorus.
All right.
But we then finally get the chorus, and the chorus is our most simple version of our reflection. Up a third, down a third.
Because maybe.
I wish Noel knew that Liam was his Wonderwall.
I know.
Like, maybe he is going to be the one that saves him, after all.
But he's...
His Wonderwall.
Writing it for Liam to sing it.
Yeah.
So...
It's like he's trying... He can't say
Noel
it in words,
saying,
but...
you're my Wonderwall? Or is Liam singing it to Noel?
Or maybe Noel's, like, trying to get Liam to sing it to him.
Dude, that's very older brother predatory behavior.
Right?
Like, the sort of like, Sphincter says what kind of dumb stuff. We're like,
say you like, I'm your Wonderwall. Say it.
Say it. Say it. Say it. You love me.
You
say
need
it.
Me. You
stop
need
hitting
me.
Yourself. Stop hitting yourself. Right.
I'm your Wonderwall.
This is all just an elaborate trap.
And right.
He sets himself up. I haven't seen them live. Does he force? Is there a power moves based on where he has to stand? So who's he looking at? Who's the Wonderwall? Yeah. Does Noel get to be the Wonderwall that Liam's seeing, or is it the opposite? I don't know.
I also, while you've been, it's been riveting this conversation, but I've also been deep diving on their feud while like you've been talking, and I know so much information.
Love it. Have
to pay
attention. Okay. Love it. By the way,
no, I'm paying attention.
I am done on the music.
Okay.
The point being, helps make the song catchy. Yeah. Everything feels like it's orbiting a note, feels contained, cohesive. Okay, give me the deets.
So, even before their worldwide fame, they had a bad relationship. And there was like bootleg recordings of them arguing about like the something that happened on the US tour that they went on, I think, for this album. And it really just kind of spiraled out of control. Then there's something that the internet's calling the Morning Glory incident during the recording of their second album, a disagreement over bringing pub.
This album, yeah.
Yes. A disagreement over bringing pub goers into the studio, which I don't understand, led a physical fight where Noel allegedly hit Liam with a cricket bat, which seems like too British to me.
A cricket bat. Also, apparently Noel plays bass on this song instead of Paul, not Paul, their older brother, but the bassist in the band, which pissed Liam off. I don't know if it pissed Paul off, but also, who does that? Like, why do you like, that's very Billy Corgan or very the Eagles.
And like, what was the bass player?
Hey, you were gone and I recorded your entire part. Right.
And
you
the bass player's just like out in the back smoking a cigarette during
it. I guess. Like, I don't know. There's more to that. Listeners, what you're hearing is a lack of deep research. These are just single line things we found.
From ChatGPT.
Oh, see, mine's not. Yeah. Okay.
Well, not that much. Not that.
ChatGPT.
Not ChatGPT.
ChatGPT, are you accurate in your salacious details?
In essence, the Oasis feud was a complex interplay of personality, creative differences, and sibling dynamics that ultimately led to the band's demise and a decades-long conflict between Liam and Noel Gallagher.
That's ChatGPT right
yeah,
there?
A million percent.
Awesome.
Yeah. And that's all.
But spoken by a human being, so it's real.
So it's like there's a layer of authenticity to it.
Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Batcher and me, Mark Poppany. I also produce. Please leave us a rating and a review, and don't forget to follow. We're Never Music Pod on social media, and you can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Nevermind the Music is part of the Lorehounds Network. Join the conversation by going to thelorehounds.com and hop on our Discord server. Thanks for listening.